Welcome back to the program. Many fear that technology today is out of control. But perhaps what's really out of control is an imbalance of our values over the last few centuries, as we have drastically valued technology as a solution to the complexities of life. As a result, the emotional aspect of problem solving has often been left by the wayside. Perhaps it is we as individuals, and then as nations, and then as a global community, need to reevaluate what we need, the needs of others around us, and how technology fits into that equation. The dangers and complexities of technology have been the subject of our guest, best-selling novelist Robin Cook. He is the author of 31 previous books. He's credited with popularizing the medical thriller, and of course his first novel, Coma, has become an integral part of our culture. It is my pleasure to welcome Robin Cook back to this program to talk about his newest work, Nano. Robin Cook, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Great to have you here. It's interesting, you, as a result of so many of your books in the past, have gotten all of us thinking about medicine, about its technological dangers, about what we can and can't do, and where it sometimes goes over the line. Talk a little bit about how you think about these issues. Is this something that consumes you? How do you approach these ideas?
Well, let me feel that by taking you back to my introduction to medicine, when I was a medical student just arriving at Columbia Medical School and just so thrilled to be there. I mean, it was sort of all this work, getting all these A's in college just so I could get in, etc. And I was just thrilled to be part of this wonderful profession. But very quickly, I began to see or sense that the profession was not what I thought it was going to be. And my ideas about what the profession was going to be was, well, first, I had a general practitioner, but also that I had watched a lot of movies.
Right.
I had watched a lot of TV shows. I don't know if you ever watched Dr. Ben Casey.
Sure.
And this is when I was in college, and Thursday night he was on, and myself and a couple other pre-med guys, we'd get in this room and we'd watch Ben Casey, and we all just, you know, couldn't wait to become part of this world. And when I got in there, I realized that this world was not what I really thought it was. It was not what was presented in the media. And I realized ultimately that what was presented in the media was what we wanted it to be, and not what the reality was. And so that's when I decided that someday I'm going to write a book and a movie and maybe a TV show or whatever about medicine the way it really is, rather than the way the romantic sort of idea of what it is, because it was damn scary when I realized that the medical profession wasn't doing a very good job policing itself. Hospitals, there were good hospitals, there were bad hospitals. I mean, it was just so different and so disappointing in a lot of ways. So that's what started me out and started me writing books. And it was mostly at the beginning, it was the problem with the way we taught, because that was my experience, was the fact that we're being taught, and we're not being taught, you know, we're not being encouraged to be the kind of doctors that we thought we would be when we were young. And that was part of the problem. And the other issue I could see is that progressively more and more business ideas or sense were coming into medicine. Medicine, in a certain sense, lost its way. And it became so self-absorbed that it wasn't really doing what the public wanted or public needed. And to the extent of, for instance, the whole health movement in this country that occurred during the 80s, and the medical profession was dragged along unwillingly. I mean, they should have been the one encouraging it or starting it or whatever. It was just another example. And unfortunate profits and business interests, et cetera, have really taken a progressive toll on medicine. And then you combine that with something that I didn't even anticipate, and that is the quickening pace of technological change.
Right.
Nobody anticipated how quickly one sort of discovery after another have been made and are going to be continued to being made. And this has an enormous impact on our lifestyle and on medicine. And so, I mean, it's good that I'm writing these books now. If I was 50 years older, I would have run out of issues.
It's interesting to see the complexity, the interplay in medicine today of essentially all the ideas you're talking about, this kind of three-legged stool between the business interests on one hand, technology as it relates to medicine today, and those doctors that still are trying to practice a kind of intuitive medicine. And the three areas seem to be in perpetual conflict in the world of medicine today.
Yes, and what's really happening is that the technological and the business side of that triumvirate are winning out. And the old sort of fashioned Hippocratic kind of ideal of medicine is losing. For instance, I see it all the time. A lot of my contemporaries are retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And they're retiring, which is a surprise, because when I was young and when I went into medicine, nobody retired. They loved medicine so much. And they were so involved that if something forced them to retire, they retired. But otherwise, they just kept going. Nowadays, so many doctors that I know, and these are good doctors, these are the ones that I would like to go to myself or whatever, they're retiring, which is such a huge loss, and it's just indicative of the fact that the environment itself, the medical environment, is changing. And for me to try to keep up with that, with my novels, just doing one a year is just inadequate.
Talk about it from the perspective of young doctors today, the doctors that are going through medical school now, and the world that they need to navigate.
Well, that's the only thing that, to me, is positive, is that the young doctors now coming up, I think, are being influenced by the fact that they're not going to be sucked into this fee-for-service kind of circumstance that favors overutilization. I think most young doctors today are recognizing that they are probably going to be salaried physicians, meaning that, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's probably better in many, many, many different ways, because they can be the kind of doctors they wanted to be before they went to medical school for their whole career. They're not going to be influenced by just by ways of maximizing their income or something like that. So in some respects, in that regard, I see that as a favorable change. And in fact, all my old friends who are retiring now were, you know, caught up in the fee-for-service kind of circumstance. That is going to change. And I think medicine is going to be forced to be very different in the very, very near future. We're getting a bit away from nano, but...
Well, no, I want to come back to nano, because the other part of it is the technological side and the technology that young doctors have available to them today, and the instinct to want to use that technology, things like nanotechnology and what it can provide us.
Yes, well, very much so. Although there are some recognizable risks as well in terms of the technology. We're seeing kind of a number of op-ed pieces dealing with the fact of something that seems so simple, like electronic records, and yet is this going to be a help or a hindrance to the kind of medicine that we all want and long for, even us doctors? And, I mean, ultimately, the kind of medicine that we would like for ourselves and the kind of medicine that we give, we would hope that they were the same. And in some respects, this medical records, which seem to be such a simple circumstance and a big help, definitely has some downsides as well.
What about things like nanotechnology and the way it is able to help medicine today? I mean, in some ways, it's the science fiction of Fantastic Voyage. In other ways, it is very real and very practical today.
Right now, it's probably more on the practical side because nanotechnology in medicine is more of what it's done in the general arena of products, making packaging better, making bandages better in terms of incorporating nanoparticles that inhibit the growth of microorganisms. There's also some nanotechnology and some implantable meshes that are used, you know, for hernia repair or neurosurgery and that kind of stuff. What's around the corner, though, is even a bigger and much more inclusive kind of tidal wave of abilities and products that are going to completely change diagnostics, for instance, in medicine, and also therapeutics, and also the delivery of drugs, and also enhancing imaging technologies in ways that we can hardly even anticipate today, to be able to show internal structure in a much, much more detailed way, to be able to delineate specifically things like cancer metastases and things like that.
Of course, the other aspect of it is the way in which it can help, at least conceptually, it might be able to help enhance human performance.
That's true, but, you know, and that's now we're coming into nano,
right.
Because in nano, that's what's happening, is that there is a company that has become very interested in enhancing human performance, but not as really as a major addition to medical armamentarium, but more to cater to the needs of the Chinese, who are holding all the foreign exchange, which they need to develop the kind of nanotechnology that they think is really going to make a difference in medicine.
Talk a little bit about the medical thriller as a genre and the way people respond to it. I mean, people are fascinated by doctors. They're fascinated by medicine. It also creates a certain level of fear. I mean, I know people that even since coma are still afraid of anesthesia.
Well, and indeed, and I have to say that I've done it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I did it on purpose because I realized after my first book was kind of a flop, that in order to get people's attention, that I had to entertain them. And one of the ways of entertaining people is through the mystery thriller, the mystery thriller really works best if it can evoke some emotion in the reader, and particularly emotion of fear. Because if they can put themselves into a circumstance in which they would be in the same peril as the protagonist, it's much more immediate. For instance, when people read the book Jaws, it terrified them, but they could make the decision that, all right, that's it. I'm not going back in the ocean.
Right.
Whereas when they read Coma and they got fearful, they could not say, all right, I'm not going back in the hospital. And so it's on a very different level. It's on a much more personal level. But I do that very specifically because I'm outlining things that they should be fearful about.
And hospitals are inherently scary places.
I mean, and they are inherently dangerous places.
Talk about that.
Well, before coma, I remember people having sort of such a cavalier attitude towards hospitals that they would even say, like, oh, my gosh, I feel exhausted. I think I'll check myself into a hospital. I mean, that's the worst idea in the world.
Right.
And the fact that people actually had that expression meant that they had a fundamental misunderstanding. A hospital is a place that you should only go when you're essentially carried in. And you're in that bad a shape that you really need the facilities of the hospital to try to patch you back together again, and then get out as soon as you possibly can.
Right. Somebody once made the comment, I mean, you know, and I think most of our listeners will relate to, if you go to an emergency room in some kind of pain or some kind of distress, when a doctor will ask you, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the pain? And you always want to answer, well, if it was anything less than 8, I wouldn't be here in this terrible place.
Right. Well, anyway, that's sort of one of the things that I wanted to let people know about. And when you said about people being scared of anesthesia, actually, that's an appropriate attitude, because anesthesia is ultimately scary and dangerous. And doctors themselves are not real fond of anesthesia when they're the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And so coma did that. It made people realize that anesthesia was not the comfortable metaphor of going to sleep. It was actually something that was very carefully done. You really depended upon the skill of the anesthesiologist or anesthetist, as the case may be, and that it was something that should be treated with great respect. And if you can get away with a local anesthetic of some sort, or a spinal or something like that, that's probably a better idea.
It's interesting that as much as we are afraid of these things, we're also drawn to them. Obviously, we love your books and your medical thrillers, and hospital dramas have been the staple of entertainment and of television for so long.
That's correct, because it's something that involves us. We all know that at some point, we're going to end up in a hospital. And so there's this kind of love-hate attraction to learn about it, and then just sort of breathe out and with great relief that we're not there.
Right. Talk a little bit about what you've learned about nanotechnology and the dangers that it holds. I mean, we can certainly hear all about the promise of it, but there are some really inherent dangers as well.
There is. The whole reason that nanotechnology works is that all these elements that are completely different in a nano form. They have different chemical properties, different physical properties. The optics are different. The electrical properties are different. Everything is different. And the fact that they are so reactive, and I explain that as in the sense that if you have like something in a bulk form, like a bar of gold, it's very durable, it's gold color, it doesn't do anything, it just sits there forever. In the nano form, gold is extremely reactive, and it can be used as a catalyst, and nor is it the color gold. And the reason is that when you have all these individual little pieces, there's many, many more electrons that can interact, and they all specifically interact in biological systems. All these electrons are available. So as soon as you put something nano, like a piece of gold, in a biological system, in a bloodstream, for instance, it immediately attracts and gets all these proteins stick to it because it reacts with everything. Ergo, you know it's going to have biological effects. And therefore, one would assume that if you know it's going to have biological effects, then you better do safety, health, and environmental testing before you release these particles either into the environment or specifically put them into a body, someone's body. But unfortunately, that's not being done. And even though there are lots and lots of toxicologists that have raised the alarm saying, you know, we're producing this nanotechnology, all these nanotechnology particles, they're going into all sorts of consumer goods, we really haven't been testing whether or not these things are safe, ultimately. They seem to be very, very durable, so it's not as if we can get rid of them easily. And they, when they go into the body, they go all over the place. They even the smallest nanoparticles can go right into cells, and not only into cells, but into intercellular structures like a nuclei and stuff like that. And the fact that the testing just hasn't been done, there's no real push for it to be done because nanotechnology is so commercially successful so quickly that all the research and development is being done surreptitiously behind closed doors.
And of course, as we see today, and you touch on this, is that a lot of the research that's being done in so many of these areas, technological areas with respect to medicine today, don't have to go by our standards. They can be done offshore. They can be done in China. They can be done in a lot of other places.
That's right. And it is being done that way. I mean, nanotechnology is big in China. It's big in Japan. It's big in Europe. This country has spent the most amount of government money on nanotechnology, encouraging the industry, up to $18 billion, but less than 3% of that has been spent or delegated towards safety studies.
I guess we should continue to be very afraid when we go to the doctor.
Well, that's why I thought it was a good subject for a cookbook.
Robin Cook, his new novel is Nano. Robin, it is always a pleasure. I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.